It was in their last hour together, during the dropship ride down, that Father Hoyt had gained the slightest glimpse into his companion's thoughts. The limb of Hyperion had been glowing white and green and lapis above them for hours, when suddenly the old dropship had cut into the upper layers of atmosphere. Flame had briefly filled the window. And then they were flying silently, some 60 kilometers above dark cloud masses and starlit seas, with the hurtling terminator of Hyperion sunrise rushing toward them like a spectral tidal wave of light.
"Marvelous," Paul Duret had whispered, more to himself than to his young companion. "Marvelous. It is at times like this that I have the sense, the slightest sense, of what a sacrifice it must have been for the Son of God to condescend to become the Son of Man."
Hoyt had wanted to talk then, but Father Duret had continued to stare out the window, lost in thought. 10 minutes later, they had landed at Keats Interstellar. Father Duret was soon swept into the whirlpool of customs and luggage rituals, and 20 minutes after that, a thoroughly disappointed Lennar Hoyt was rising toward space, and the Nadia Oleg once again.
5 weeks later of my time, I returned to Parchim, said Father Hoyt. I had mislaid 8 years, but for some reason my sense of loss ran deeper than that simple fact. Immediately upon my return, the bishop informed me that there had been no word from Paul Duret during the 4 years of his stay on Hyperion. The New Vatican had spent a fortune on fatline inquiries, but neither the colonial authorities nor the consulate in Keats had been able to locate the missing priest.
Hoyt paused to sip from his water glass, and the consul said, "I remember the search. I never met Duret, of course, but we did our best to trace him. Theo, my aide, spent a lot of energy over the years trying to solve the case of the missing cleric. Other than a few contradictory reports of sightings in Port Romance, there was no trace of him. And those sightings went back to the weeks right after his arrival, years before. There were hundreds of plantations out there with no radios or comm lines, primarily because they were investing bootleg drugs as well as fiberglastic. I guess we never talked to the people at the right plantation. At least I know Father Duret's file was still open when I left."
Father Hoyt nodded. "I landed in Keats a month after your replacement had taken over at the consulate. The bishop had been astonished when I volunteered to return. His Holiness himself granted me an audience. I was on Hyperion less than 7 of its local months. By the time I left to return to the web, I had discovered the fate of Father Duret."
Hoyt tapped the 2 stained leather books on the table.
"If I am to complete this," he said, his voice thick, "I must read excerpts from these."
The tree ship Yggdrasil had turned, so the bulk of the tree had blocked the sun. The effect was to plunge the dining platform and the curved canopy of leaves beneath it into night. But instead of a few thousand stars dotting the sky, as would have been the case from a planet's surface, literally 1 million suns blazed above, beside, and beneath the group at the table. Hyperion was a distinct sphere now, hurtling directly at them like some deadly missile.
"Read," said Martin Silenus.
From the Journal of Father Paul Duret.
Day 1. So begins my exile. I am somewhat at a loss as to how to date my new journal. By the monastic calendar on Pochum, it is the 17th day of Thomas month, in the year of our Lord 2732. By hegemony standard, it is October 12th, 589 PC. By Hyperion reckoning, or so I am told by the wizened little clerk in the old hotel where I am staying, it is the 23rd day of Lysias, the last of their 7 40-day months. Either 426 ADC, after dropship crash, or the 128th year of the reign of Sad King Billy, who has not reigned for at least 100 of those years. To hell with it. I'll call it day one of my exile.